Christians should operate fully in the public square, and that includes by engaging with the media.
Molly Hemingway talking about her joint presentation at the 2017 Fall Issues Etc. Making the Case Conference.
And one of the things that they can do is encourage reporters to report things accurately and truthfully. They can express their opinions in letters to the editor and op-eds. And one of the things that's important is to just let people in the world know of the differences of opinion that are out there, that Christians don't share a lot of the secular thinking that is promulgated by the media. And so being bold and being able to stand up and simply speak truth in the public square, it's a powerful witness to others, and it's a service you can perform for your community and the country at large.
You can meet and hear Molly and Mark Hemingway making the case for Christians engaging the news media at our Fall Making the Case Conference, November 10th and 11th in Houston, Texas. Learn more at issuesetc.org. Welcome back to Issues Etc. I'm Todd Wilkin. The Anti-Defamation League was founded in order to, well, in a lot of ways, to, as its name implies, keep defamatory speech and actions under check, to raise awareness about those things and perhaps find some legal recourse for people who are defamed for being Jewish. And yet recently the Anti-Defamation League has added to its list of hate speech things that are said negatively about Islam. And if you look at radical Islam, they don't think very much of Jews. It just seems like a crazy, crazy irony, so counter to even reason. Why is it that Islam is often singled out for special treatment? Not by its critics, but by its defenders, even going to the point of calling those who criticize Islam, the ideas thereof, not particular Muslims, bigots, and classifying their remarks as hate speech. We're going to be talking about free speech and radical Islam. Robert Spencer is a regular guest. He joins us to do so. He's director of Jihad Watch and author of several books on Islam, including his latest called The Complete Infidel's Guide to Free Speech and Its Enemies. Robert, welcome back to Issues Etc.
Always good to be here, Todd. Thank you.
It's kind of ironic. Famous atheist Richard Dawkins has for decades been an outspoken critic of Christianity, both in Europe and in the United States. But recently, in Berkeley, California, a public radio station had invited him to speak at a fundraiser and canceled his speaking because he had been publicly critical of Islam. How does that happen?
Well, you know, Islam is sacrosanct as far as the left is concerned. There is a tremendous alliance between leftists and Islamic jihadis and leftists and stealth jihadis, and they just will not put up with any criticism of Islam. They have bought into the idea that Muslims are uniquely the victims of harassment and persecution in the United States, which is false, and that consequently they warrant special treatment, special consideration, and anybody who says any remotely critical word, even opposition to jihad terror, is a racist and a bigot and an Islamophobe. And so Richard Dawkins, they stand up and cheer when he criticizes Christianity. But when he crosses the line into criticizing Islam, then suddenly they think, well, this is racism and bigotry. We can't have this. And this is exactly what I'm talking about in this book, Todd, that there has been a general acceptance in the United States of the idea that there's something wrong with criticizing Islam, and that this has become incredibly widespread, such that I'm sure that the organizers of the Richard Dawkins event in Berkeley, they never imagined that they would have any backlash, because probably everybody they know completely agrees with and accepts the idea that there's something wrong with criticizing Islam under whatever circumstance.
Within Islam, why is it often punishable, well, sometimes even by death, to either criticize Islam, but probably mostly in most cases, to speak critically of Muhammad, their prophet?
Well, you know, it's all about Muhammad as far as Islam is concerned. The Quran is full of examples of Muhammad being given special consideration by Allah. Like, for example, in chapter 2, when Allah changes the direction of prayer for the Muslims, and they no longer are facing Jerusalem, but they're facing Mecca to pray. It says in the Quran, Allah says to Muhammad, I know you're going to like this new direction. And many times, Muhammad is downcast because people aren't accepting his message, and Allah is consoling him. And there are all sorts of things. He has special permission to have more wives than the other Muslims. And so all these things, either you have two choices when you're confronted with this kind of thing. You can think Muhammad was a con man who had skillfully fooled these people into thinking he was a prophet, and then he's using his prophetic status to get special favors from them, and by passing himself off as the apple of the eye of the creator of the universe, he's able to get his special status that he wants among the people, or he really is the most important person who ever lived. And in that case, then if you say something negative about him, it's even worse than saying something negative about Allah himself.
Let's talk about the charge of racism that is often heard here in the United States when Islam is criticized. Why is that a nonsensical criticism?
Well, obviously, Islam is not a race. There are Muslims of all races. There are Islamic jihadis of all races. Let's remember that way back when the United States government, the United States military first went into Afghanistan, they uncovered a young man from California, John Walker Lynn, who was fighting in Afghanistan alongside al-Qaeda and the Taliban against American troops. He was a white boy from California, and there are jihadis of all races. So to say that it's racist to oppose jihad or to oppose the spread of Sharia in the United States, Islamic law, is sort of a ridiculous oversimplification and obfuscation of reality. Yes, certainly most of the Muslims in the United States today are Arabs, Pakistanis, Afghans, Indians, and so on, and thus are not considered to be white in general. But nonetheless, Islam is an ideology. It's a set of beliefs, and any people of any races can and do hold to that set of beliefs.
In fact, there are vast swaths of Islam that are not Arab, not Pakistani.
Most Muslims today are not Arabs. The largest Muslim country is Indonesia. The second is India. Both not Arab. Pakistan, Afghanistan, Iran, not Arabs. And so the closest thing you could say is that it's an Arabic religion because it mandates the speaking of Arabic. Converts to Islam change their names to Arabic names. But nonetheless, there are more non-Arab Muslims than there are Arabs. So it's just in no sense a racial issue.
Robert Spencer is our guest director of Jihad Watch and author of his latest, The Complete Infidel's Guide to Free Speech and Its Enemies. When we come back, how is that simple fact overlooked, that Islam isn't a race? Why can racism be simply thrown out there as the charge against those who are not criticizing any particular Muslim of any race, but in fact criticizing the ideas of Islam? We'll answer that question with Robert Spencer after this.
Your comprehensive source for information, teaching, and truth. You're listening to Issues Etc.
Are you tired of working out at big box gyms? You'll find quality personal training and qualified instruction at Performance Fitness in Edwardsville. You can even work out for a full 30 days before making a commitment to join. Find out more at performancefitness618.com or call 618-692-5063. Performance Fitness is the facility in the St. Louis Metro East where the focus is on member results, not membership numbers. Performancefitness618.com.
Do you want a church with a rockin' band and a sermon series to help you live a better life? It's not here. Bethany Evangelical Lutheran Church in Fairview Heights offers authentic, historic Christianity to a world awash in fads and entertainment, and offers forgiveness of sins to people overwhelmed with guilt and shame. Join us Sundays at 9:30 on Old Collinsville Road in Fairview Heights, Illinois, to receive the life-giving gifts of God with us. Find out more online at bethanylcms.org.
We're talking about free speech and radical Islam on this Tuesday, July the 25th. I'm Todd Wilkin. This is Issues Etc. Robert Spencer is our guest of Jihad Watch. after we conclude our conversation with him. Wesley Smith of the Discovery Institute Center for Human Exceptionalism will be our guest to give us an update on Charlie Gard. At least the story coming out over social media is that Charlie Gard's parents have ended their legal fight to get treatment for their terminally ill son. We'll find out what it's all about with Wesley Smith in about 20 minutes, about 30 minutes from now. Robert, before the break, you had mentioned that Islam isn't a race. So the charge of racism when someone criticizes the ideas of Islam is, well, doesn't make a lot of sense. But how can that fact be overlooked, that Islam isn't a race, especially when what's being criticized are the ideas of Islam, not any particular Muslim?
This distinction is deliberately overlooked, Todd, to stifle criticism of Islam. Because, of course, racism is America's national trauma. And so if you can convince certain people that you're just, that the what you want to shut down is something that's racist, then they'll run the other way. Nobody wants to be thought of as a racist. Nobody wants to be a racist. And so you have the idea that there is something racist about opposing jihad terror. You'll get a lot of people who think, oh, well, then by all means, we must not oppose jihad terror. And this is the inhibition that has come over all of us, really, or most people in the United States, to a tremendous degree, that even the slightest opposition to jihad terror is considered racist and out of bounds. The worst example of this was about 10 or 12 years ago when there was a group of Muslims in New Jersey. They were going to go into Fort Dix and kill as many American soldiers as possible before they themselves were killed. The plot was foiled when there was a young man who worked in a video store. The jihadis went into the video store and asked him to transfer their bloody, gory jihad tapes from VHS to DVD. While he's doing it, he saw what was on them, and he asked his boss, should I go to the police, or would that be racist? And this is the result of Council on American Islamic Relations and all these other Islamic groups and leftist groups pounding it into us for all these years, that to oppose jihad terror, to oppose Islamic supremacism, it's wrong, it's racist. So that this young man even thought to go to law enforcement over people who are obviously plotting mass murder, that would be wrong and racist. Well, we can be glad that he did go ahead and decide to be racist, but it was a close call.
Make the case why we all, everyone, needs the freedom of speech.
Freedom of speech is the foundation of a free society. Let's say that I am a tyrannical ruler, and I want to do things that are unpopular. And I do them, and then people start speaking out against me. And so I say, well, you know, I'm going to crack down on hate speech. And hate speech is those people here who are speaking out against what I'm doing and saying. And if the tyrant can do that, then he can work his will without any opposition. Nobody will be able to say a word. It's the freedom of speech that allows for the society to be free, the freedom of speech that makes it possible for Americans to know that our society will remain free and to keep and protects us from living under a tyranny that can do whatever it wants and nobody will be able to say a word. But that's where we're going now because of the increasing popularity of the ideas of hate speech, that there's something wrong with taking various positions and it is hateful in and of itself.
Talk about the organizations. You had just mentioned a few a moment ago, but tell us about these organizations and how they are active in attempting to squelch free speech in free countries when it comes to Islam.
Well, you know, the Council on American Islamic Relations and the Islamic Society of North America, the groups like that with ties to the Muslim Brotherhood and Hamas, and then their leftist allies, such as the Southern Poverty Law Center, the ACLU, and so on. These groups have identified what they call Islamophobes, a group of people who they say are leading racists and bigots in the United States who are trying to turn people against Muslims and make people hate Muslims. And they publish these lavishly funded, lavishly published reports about these terrible people, these Islamophobes. And there are many such reports out there now. And I'm always one of the people in them. And the thing is that I think it's ludicrous. They're, in a certain sense, even though they are defaming and libeling me, at the same time, it's a certain kind of tribute that the people who are propagating these perspectives, they think, man, I have a lot of power. They think that I can make people dislike Muslims. Well, in the first place, I have no interest in doing that. But even if you allow for that to be my purpose, there's no way I could even accomplish it. The people who are making people dislike Muslims, the people who are making people suspicious of Islam, are people like Osama bin Laden and the Tsarnaev brothers and Nidal Hassan, the shooter at Fort Hood, and all the other Islamic jihadis who've committed mass murder while screaming Allahu Akbar or invoking the Quran. Those are the people that have made people dislike Muslims and be suspicious of Islam. And the idea of these Islamophobia reports is to stigmatize anybody who is actually calling attention to this phenomenon and to jihad activity and make it so that there is nothing that can be said, that people will realize that it's wrong and racist, or get the idea that it's wrong and racist to stand up to jihad terror activity.
Along with the freedom of speech, of course, is freedom of the press, but it appears, and tell me if I'm wrong here, Robert, that at least in the United States, the press doesn't need any kind of governmental or even Islamic organization to censor them. They do that pretty well themselves, don't they?
Yeah, the Society of Professional Journalists, not long after 9/11, issued guidelines that called upon journalists never to mention Islam or jihad in connection with terrorism. And they've done that. You know, and even nowadays, I have to read the tea leaves when I'm working at my website, Jihad Watch, which tracks jihad activity. I find that I'm used to it now. I read these stories, and it says youths are rioting in Paris. And, you know, 47 paragraphs down, it'll tell you that they're from Morocco and Algeria. And so you get the idea that this is Muslims who are rioting in Paris. And then I might find a video where they're screaming Allahu Akbar, but they are deliberate attempts to cover up what exactly is going on. And this is a concerted effort by the mass media. As a matter of fact, in the book, I explain, Todd, that several governments in Europe, the governments of Sweden, of Germany, of Denmark, they've actually put pressure on the press in their countries not to report on the ethnicity or the religion of criminals, because the criminals in these countries are so disproportionately Muslim migrants, and they don't want people to think ill of Muslim migrants. They want people to think that the mass Muslim migration is just a wonderful thing that hasn't caused any problem and isn't causing any problem for anyone. And this is a very, very insidious agenda, which ultimately will result in the overwhelming of free society, because we're simply not able to talk about these problems, and most people aren't even aware, because of the media obfuscation, of just how bad these problems really are at this point.
In the United States, there still is, in a kind of a vestigial form, but had been much more so in the latter 20th century, the Anti-Defamation League, an attempt,
yes,
I think, largely to try and raise public awareness, but also to deal with issues of anti-Semitism when it comes to speech and other kinds of actions. Where do they seem to stand on this issue of Islam?
Well, the ADL has also issued Islamophobia reports and has denounced me and denounced several of my colleagues, and says that we pursue a conspiratorial anti-Muslim agenda. That's actually the ADL's exact words. And I think if there's a conspiracy here, it's that of the Muslim Brotherhood, which is dedicated in its own words, according to a captured internal document, to eliminating and destroying Western civilization from within and sabotaging its miserable house. I didn't write that. Pamela Geller didn't write that. Frank Gaffney didn't write that. That was the Muslim Brotherhood. But as far as the ADL is concerned, if you listen to them, it's as if we are concocting this. Now, why the ADL is falling on that side, when there is such inveterate Islamic anti-Semitism, and certainly the jihad groups target Jews before and above all, targeting all others, and yet this doesn't seem to make any difference.
How can that be? That just seems so counterintuitive, and it seems in a lot of ways wantonly self-destructive for the Anti-Defamation League to stand in defense and attack the critics of anti-Semites.
Well, I couldn't agree more. And I think that there is, in general, they've just imbibed the whole leftist idea that it is somehow racist and bigoted to stand against jihad terror. And I think they underestimate the depth and the power and the breadth of Islamic anti-Semitism, and they don't think they're going to be suffering its consequences.
What does the term hate speech really mean in American parlance?
Well, the thing is, the hate speech, Todd, it means whatever you want it to mean, and that's the problem. The problem is that hate speech is a subjective judgment. In America today, for the most part, hate speech means anything that departs from the far-left agenda. It has started out as meaning real incitement to violence or racist language and so on. That was fair enough. But now, for years, the Islamic advocacy groups and their leftist allies have characterized as hate speech any honest discussion of the jihad threat. And now we see the other shoe dropping with the claims that hate speech is not free speech, does not deserve First Amendment protection, and that consequently it can be outlawed. What they mean is that really dissenting points of view can and must be outlawed.
How would you describe the inroads of Sharia law in the West, but also in the United States in particular?
Well, this is exactly the inroad of Sharia, the primary inroads that Sharia law has made is the restrictions on the freedom of speech, the sense that people must self-censor and make sure they don't criticize Islam, the idea that there is something to be wrong, there's something that is wrong and to be stigmatized about criticizing Islam. Recently, there was a contentious city council meeting in New Jersey, in a city where there's a Muslim mayor, and one of the school board members, contentious school board meeting, said this isn't Sharia law, this is an orderly meeting, and the mayor actually called for her resignation, said she was Islamophobic. Council on American Islamic Relations denounced her, called for her not only that she resign from the school board but be fired from her position as a professor at a local university. And what they're trying to do is make us accept Sharia blasphemy laws and the idea that it's wrong to criticize Islam under any circumstances, and those who do must be punished.
Robert Spencer is our guest, director of Jihad Watch. We're talking about free speech and radical Islam. When we come back, these anti-blasphemy laws, wouldn't they apply to blasphemy against every religion? Has the proponents of these things actually thought it through that far? We'll answer that question after this.
If you're like me, you remember when education was about the basic skills of reading, writing, and arithmetic, and about reading great literature and history that gave our kids models of what it is to be a good person. Memoria Press's classical Christian curriculum is bringing this kind of education back. Get $5 off your next order by using the coupon code LPR. For more information, go to memoriapress.com. Memoria Press, saving Western civilization one student at a time.
A year ago, my wife and I returned to America from 5 years of ministry in Karachi, Pakistan. I cannot adequately express how wonderful it was listening to Lutheran Public Radio's music broadcast each Sunday morning before church service. We still listen.
You can listen to Lutheran Public Radio, sacred music for the world, anytime, day or night, at LutheranPublicRadio.org, Amazon Echo, Google Home, and on the LPR mobile app.
Listen to what you want, when you want. You're listening to Issues, Etc.
LCMS Rural and Small Town Mission exists to support and encourage congregations in rural and small town settings. In partnership with LCMS districts, RSTM is uniquely positioned to make a major impact in revitalization support, community engagement and outreach training, congregational partnership development, and worker support, through providing and developing resources geared specifically to rural and small-town congregations. Check us out at lcms.org/RSTM or give us a call at our office. We're here to help.
At Concordia University Irvine, you can pursue advanced theological study for academic, professional, or personal development. Concordia's Master of Arts in Theology program is grounded in the truth of Scripture and insights from the Lutheran Confessions. Courses are taught online and at intensive on-campus sessions in the summer. Apologetics, Christian education leadership, and Reformation studies are just a few of the emphases offered. For more information, visit cui.edu/theology. I'm Todd Wilkin. This is Issues Etc. We're talking about free speech and radical Islam. Robert Spencer is our guest. We are busy this week contacting hotels in Houston, Texas to accommodate lodging for the attendees of the 2017 Fall Issues Etc. Making the Case Conference. The speaking lineup includes Pastor Brian Wolfmiller, Molly and Mark Hemingway, Dr. Scott Murray, Rod Dreher, and Dr. Jennifer Roback Morse. You can find out more about the premier conference for Christian laity November the 10th and 11th in Houston, Texas at issuesetc.org or give us a call 618-223-8385. Robert, before the break, you were talking about these Sharia-inspired anti-blasphemy laws. I'm wondering if anyone's thought it through sufficiently that if there were anti-blasphemy laws on the books, that would necessarily, at least if we still had the freedom of religion, apply to blasphemy against any and all religions in the United States. Have the proponents of these things thought it through that far?
No, I don't think so. I think that everybody knows that when the Organization of Islamic Cooperation calls on Western states, and the United States and others, to criminalize incitement to religious hatred, I think everybody realizes that they mean criticism of Islam. They know that criticism of Christianity, criticism of Judaism, those are taken for granted. The idea of a crucifix in a jar of urine, that's art. That's not something to be outlawed or even scolded. It's freedom of speech and it's art. But if you draw a cartoon of Muhammad, that is a terrible crime that has to be that we have to respect Islam and Muslims, and those who do not do so are excoriated.
Someone might say, "Well, I remember several years ago this satirical, somewhat crude magazine, Charlie Hebdo, in France, I believe, was the headquarters was a victim of a terrorist attack and." And then you did see people speaking up for free speech in that case. What was your take on the whole Charlie Hebdo violence?
Well, see, the thing is that when they say, if you draw Muhammad, we're going to kill you, then you have two choices and two choices only. I mean, you can ignore the whole problem, which is just kicking it down the road. But if you're going to deal with it, then you have two choices. The only two choices you have are to draw Muhammad or to surrender. To say, yes, if you say that you're going to kill me, then I'm going to either do what you say, and that is kowtow and bow to violent intimidation, or I'm going to stand up and say, nope, you're not going to manipulate me in that way. Those are your only two choices. And so the funny thing about it is that all over the West, when the Charlie Hebdo massacre happened, people said, well, we're not going to draw Muhammad. We are going to be respectful to Muslims, but we stand for the freedom of speech. No. It's a shame, but it's they who have made it the flashpoint on freedom of speech, not we. And so if we have to draw Muhammad to show that we will not kowtow to and encourage violent intimidation, then that's what we have to do. It's either that or show that we are willing to submit to bullying, and which is only going to get us more bullying.
Reporters, editors, civil leaders, all of those who either wittingly or unwittingly are a part of attempting to squelch free speech in favor of Islam's standard here. They read the same headlines we do. If the press is self-censoring, they know before they leave the fact out of a story that the youths rioting in the street were, in fact, yelling Allahu Akbar. They know that. They must know this. What are your thoughts on that kind of... one wonders how long you can keep a lid on that kind of dishonesty.
Well, I think ultimately it is going to break out. It's already breaking out. That's why trust in the establishment media is so low. That's one of the reasons why. People know they're not telling us the straight story. And they think, I would expect that establishment media types think, we have to not reveal that kind of information, because if we do, then vigilantes will run wild and will victimize innocent Muslims. And so to cover all this up is to keep the peace.
America's awareness and clash with violent Islam goes back decades to the middle of the 20th century, at the very least. And then one wonders why after 9/11, why after the countless smaller terrorist attacks that have occurred here in the United States and elsewhere, why just the average person doesn't wake up and say, there's probably something wrong with this worldview and with these ideas.
Well, that's what's been a concerted effort to stifle. That is what there has been a very, very skillful, well-organized and determined effort to make sure that people didn't think after 9/11. I remember after 9/11, and there was for a brief period a possibility for open discourse about this. And I was on shows on PBS and ABC that they would never dream of having me on now. But in that time, I think people were caught off guard, and they really didn't know what had happened, and they wanted to understand it. And so the Islamic groups and the leftist groups that are opposed to the freedom of speech, they saw that this was happening, and they moved swiftly to clamp down on it and to make sure that there would not be, that people would be afraid of studying the ideology that motivates the jihad terrorists, that they would not dare to get into what makes them think, why they do what they do. And now, by all these years later, I think that people have internalized that, and they take it for granted that, well, this has nothing to do with genuine Islam. Islam is a religion of peace. These things have been repeated, dinned into our ears for 15 years and more now. And a lot of people, they never really thought about it, but they just take it for granted. Yes, of course, you don't offend Muslims, you don't offend Islam, and it has nothing to do with terrorism. And if we say otherwise, they'll blow us up.
Which European country, in terms of free speech, has lost the most due to Islam?
In terms of free speech, I would say probably Britain, where it's actively criminal now if you criticize Islam. There was a man, a hamburger vendor. He has a little hamburger stand by the side of the road, and he was taking an order from a gentleman. Just a few weeks ago, he got into an argument with him, and he criticized Islam. And they had an argument. The guy went away and went to the police and reported the hamburger vendor for hate speech. And he was brought into court and fined. And there have been people who have spoken out about Islam, and they are put into prison in the UK. It is absolutely not allowed anymore to say a negative word about the motivating ideology of jihad terrorists.
How far behind that is the United States of America at this point?
A lot less far behind than people think. Already Facebook has accepted this. Facebook and Twitter, the social media giants. The vice president of Facebook, as a matter of fact, just a few weeks ago, flew to Pakistan in order to assure the Pakistani government that Facebook would be taking down material that was critical of Islam. And it's been happening. My readership at Jihad Watch, which is just dedicated to exposing jihad activity and tracking jihad activity around the world, the readership from Facebook dropped 90% in the middle of February, and it's never recovered. Facebook is actively moving to cut off criticism of Islam and make it impossible for people to see it, or what is perceived as criticism of Islam.
So you may still be posting stuff that is critical of Islam, but they're making sure people don't lay eyes on it?
Yeah, people can't get to it. I get emails every day now. I click on your articles, but they don't open. Or they are able to open them, but then they can't share them. And so one way or the other, they've choked out the perspective that I represent. It's not just me. Many others of the same point of view have been shut out in the same way.
At the same time, you can go on to YouTube and other social media, and you can see lots and lots of positive portrayals. You can even see what I would call propaganda from Islamic hate groups and terrorists.
Oh, yeah, that's all fine. It's only criticism of Islam that's being clamped down on. The German government is also partially responsible for this. Angela Merkel, the Chancellor of Germany, was caught on a hot mic a couple years ago, saying to Mark Zuckerberg of Facebook that he had to clamp down on hate speech. And the European Union has actually threatened Facebook and Twitter and the others with legal action if they don't clamp down on hate speech. Now, the problem is hate speech is a completely subjective thing. No, there's no clear definition of what it constitutes. And essentially what it means for Merkel and others is criticism of her disastrous suicidal migration policies, criticism of Islam that she is bringing into Germany at such a rate, and so on. And so it means that they're cracking down on me and my colleagues.
You have called this the new totalitarianism. Why is that? That's an awfully strong word. And if it is so, how do we resist it?
Only one point of view is allowed. That's what totalitarianism is all about. This is the steady cutting out of the ground from under those who have dissenting points of view, such that we have no platform. It's like in the Soviet Union. There were plenty of dissenters, but they just didn't have any way to get word out. They didn't have any way to meet up. They didn't have any way to find one another. They would type out these little sheets of material about the positions they were taking and surreptitiously distribute them. And we are getting to that point in the United States that there'll just simply be no platform for those who dissent from the leftist establishment line. And it's coming a lot faster than people think.
Where does it lead? Where does it lead in a country that is otherwise a bastion of freedom for the peoples of the world like the United States?
Well, I think that if hate speech laws are enacted, and that's very possible in the United States, there are already hate crimes laws, and hate crimes actually depend on the idea of hate speech. If I mug you and take your money, that's a crime. But if I mug you and take your money while calling you a name, that's a hate crime. And so there is already hate speech in the United States, and if that is expanded in a way that will allow for the outlawing, essentially, of various dissenting political views, then we'll be there. It'll be over for the U.S. as a free society. It's very close to that happening now. As Ronald Reagan said, that freedom is never more than a generation away from being extinguished. And this could be our generation for that.
What are the ultimate goals of groups that kind of sit at the spear's tip of the Islamic worldview, like the Islamic State? What is their ultimate goal for some place like the United States and its freedoms?
Well, they want to establish an Islamic State in the United States. Now, that, of course, is fanciful. I don't think they'll ever be able to do that. But they will be able to erode many of our freedoms in trying to do so. And this is what we see happening now. And in order to, and since they list their problems with the West as these long lists of grievances, a lot of people on the left especially tend to think, well, it's all our fault, really. And if we just listen to them and help to redress their grievances, then everything will be okay. And so we have to restrict the criticism of Islam because they don't like that. And that will mean the end of the free society.
Robert Spencer is a regular guest. He's director of Jihad Watch. He's author of several books on Islam, including his latest, The Complete Infidel's Guide to Free Speech and Its Enemies. Find a link to it at our website, issuesetc.org. When you purchase it using the Amazon link at our website, a percentage of your purchase will help support the worldwide outreach of Issues, etc. Just go to issuesetc.org, click Listen on Demand, and look for The Complete Infidel's Guide to Free Speech and Its Enemies by Robert Spencer. Robert, thank you very much.
Pleasure. Thank you, Todd.
As we speak, a UK court is deciding, their decision expected tomorrow, on where and when Charlie Gard, this terminally ill baby in Great Britain, will die. We're going to find out what's going on with Charlie Gard and his parents after this. Wesley Smith will be our guest.
Have you been too busy to get your associate's, bachelor's, or master's degree? Concordia University, Wisconsin offers 50 online educational options. Find out more at issuesetc.org. Click the Concordia University online logo and enter the program code ISSUES to waive your application fee. Concordia University, Wisconsin is here to strengthen and support the church. Lifelong Lutheran learning. issuesetc.org and click Concordia University, Wisconsin online.
If you've ever attended an Issues Etc. conference or any number of events that take place across the Synod and have wondered why more people from my congregation aren't here, check out the special seminar package the CLCC is offering for the 500th anniversary. All you need so the pastors of your circuit can organize, promote, and present a seminar that appeals to the members of your congregation, even the youth, is provided free by the CLCC. Just go to theclcc.org and click on the blue box, or check us out on Facebook.
¿Qué podemos decir nosotros acerca de la muerte, el estado del alma, o las costumbres de los funerales? The Lutheran Witness tiene los artículos relevantes con respuestas fieles en las ediciones de junio y julio. Visiten a cph.org/trylutheranwitness para una oferta especial. 6 ediciones digitales o impresas para $6.99. The Lutheran Witness, interpretando a un mundo contemporáneo desde una perspectiva cristiana.
At Risen Christ Lutheran Church in Arvada, Colorado, we have simply become captivated by the hilarious notion that God has sent His Son, Jesus Christ, into the world to save the losers of this world, losers just like us. We proclaim the biblical notion that God saves sinners. Embracing the historic liturgy of the church, we confess that we are just that, sinners. Visit us online at risenchristlutheran.org.
Others talk. We have something to say. You're listening to Issues, Etc.
I think every man, every Christian should consider, at least, the possibility of God calling him into the holy ministry.
Issues, Etc. regular guest, Dr. Carl Fekencher of Concordia Theological Seminary, Fort Wayne, Indiana.
Because that's the way that God has designed for faith in Christ Jesus to be spread, for the gift of eternal life that Christ Jesus earned by his death and resurrection to be shared with people by the washing of baptism for infants and for adults, for the instruction, the proclamation of the word that happens on a nonstop basis in God's kingdom. God uses people, he uses men to be those proclaimers, to be those men who share the sacraments.
If you've ever considered becoming a pastor, contact Concordia Theological Seminary in Fort Wayne, Indiana. Their phone number, 1-800-481-2155, 1-800-481-2155, or visit ctsfw.edu.